Welcome back, WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively making the Maryland Crab Cake Tour happen. I'm wearing my Costas Inn shirt, Dundalk established 1971. I was established in Dundalk in 1968. We're going to be establishing a little place down there for some crab imperial and some fix things, sort of crab soup. It's been a little cold. Offense and defense got cold on Sunday. We'll be at Costas on two until five on Tuesday. A lot of twos going in there. On Tuesday from two until five, we'll be at Costas. And it's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery and our friends on the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm going to be giving away these Raven Scratch-Offs. We had a lucky little batch down at Fadley's on Friday where I got together with Bill Cole as well as Mac Campbell, who runs the Baltimore Convention Center, who's become a friend. It's been fun having those guys on. And I also made a new friend. Jeff Ratnow came down and discussed the land development around the Inner Harbor and Harbor Place and the future of all that. I've done a lot of Maryland Stadium Authority stuff with Tom Kelso. I hope everyone as concerned citizens has listened to that. Also had Neil DeMoss on from Field of Schemes this week. John Waters has dropped by. So we've done a lot of things around here. Crab Cake Tour is at Costas this week. Next week, we are at Pappas on Tuesday in Parkville. Parkville location, right in the area. I got a lot of Towson folks stopping by. It's going to be a good time. Right before Thanksgiving on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, then the week after Thanksgiving, we are on the road, brought to you by our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free throughout the holiday season, as well as Jiffy Lube Multi-Care, pitching into Maryland, make the Maryland Crab Cake Tour great. So the following week, we're at Coco's on Wednesday, then on Thursday the 30th, we're going to Gertrude's at the BMA with Dan Rodericks promoting his show in the holiday season, as well as on Friday, the 1st of December, going to start the month up at Hollywood Casino up in Cecil County in Perryville. Going to be there giving away Maryland Lottery scratch-offs and chatting with lots of – I have great, great guests coming up all month long. So wherever you are, come on out, say hello. We're at State Fair in Catonsville on December the 5th. We're going to be at Far and Daughter with Curio Wellness on the 15th. I did a tour of their entire cannabis operation from grow, and they don't even use seeds. It's crazy, to becoming packaging and gummies all the way through. All of it happens right here in Baltimore County. It's amazing. So I'm learning a lot. Still have a lot to learn about football, Luke. I'll tell you this, because I thought a 2-touchdown lead against the Cleveland Browns, if you're a Super Bowl contender at home, you just salt the game away and you win the game. And I know we blame the defense to some degree, but boy, the offense didn't carry its water. The offense couldn't get first downs. The offense couldn't keep the ball. The offense had bad luck in the case of Lamar and the ball going up in the air. When one of those things happens, that it comes down as a pick six is tragic, but you know, they even missed an extra point to open the door. Like, the Browns browned. You and I reached for our Twitter to do that two or three times on Sunday, and they browned, and as I've written it, Baltimore Positive, that was sort of a brown out, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it was such an odd performance from the offense, because you look at elements of it. I mean, they averaged 6.1 yards per play. You look at that, Nestor, just – in isolation, that's really good.
You won. And yeah, you must have won.
They had to, you know, they had some big plays. I mean, you get the 40-yard touchdown to Beckham. You know, I mean, Keaton Mitchell, which, you know, there was a lot of talk about why he didn't get the ball more. But
Well, you have two big plays there. They had some explosive plays.
They had some big plays, no doubt. And we've been talking about that, right? About them.
That's the only way they scored. If they didn't have those plays, they wouldn't have scored on Sunday.
So, I mean, you look at parts of it, and parts of it looked good. I mean, they had the great for opening drive after the Hamilton pick six. I mean, they're up 14-0 less than 5 minutes into the game. They have the really good drive coming out of the third quarter after the choppy end to the first half that included the, you know, the blocked field goal, you know, Lamar with the pick. So you're feeling good about that, but they went 2 of 8 on third down. I mean, think about it. Their two third down conversions were the touchdown to Beckham. And then late in the game, they did convert to, you know, Lamar completed one to Zay Flowers late in the game that felt big at the time, but then they, you know, the drive piddled out after that. So, yeah, there were too many stretches of Sunday's game where the offense just couldn't do a whole lot. And look, this goes back to what I said at the beginning of our a previous conversation we had about the defense. It's a really good Browns defense. So I'm more inclined to give them more credit than I am to give the Browns offense too much credit. based on how they performed by and large this season and how Deshaun Watson has performed really since he's become a Cleveland Brown. So, you want to be mindful of that. And, they did lose Ronnie Stanley in the third quarter, which I think, it appeared to compromise, frankly, their confidence to, run the football and try to sustain some drives that way. But, it wasn't good enough over the course of 60 minutes. And you look at it, you say, okay, 31 points on paper, that sounds like a good enough offensive performance, right? But seven of those came on the Kyle Hamilton pick six. And then the Gus Edwards touchdown. I mean, James Proche, old friend, muffs that punt and they get the ball at the 12-yard line. So they were
And it still took him
basically
15 minutes to score.
right. I was just going to say
Crazy.
that. But
And he threw a pick.
basically they were spotted, they were kind of gifted 14 points almost, by their defense and their special teams, although more so James Proche just flat out dropping a punt. So you look
The
at it through
way, is
the
there any rule about spacing you have to give a guy there?
I mean, if he does, what do you mean?
Space to catch the football, literally, that you can't rub your hands
I
and,
mean,
I mean,
you can't hit him as he's trying to catch it, but if you don't call for a fair catch, I mean, you're going to be lit up.
he didn't call for a fair catch. Fair
Yeah.
enough. Like,
Yeah, yeah.
fair enough. Like, I'm thinking about it and I'm thinking like,
Now, he
oh my
just muffed
God.
that. I mean, there was nothing. He just flat out dropped that. I mean, that's.
He should have fair caught the ball, dude.
Or, yeah. Or,
No, but
I
I'm
mean,
saying, like, to me, like, he was. The ball hit his ma hit like off the mask and shoulders, and he was popped. And I was like, "Oh my God!" Like he got blown up. I'm thinking, fair catch. Did he signal? Like I no, I guess not. Right? That's really the issue there. He should have fair caught
I mean,
and caught it,
well, I was
obviously.
just going to say, yeah, you got to catch them. I mean, you can fair catch it and you muff it. That's not going to help
But
you.
fair
So,
catching it, and the
yeah.
guy gets up in your face when you're fair catching, how much space do you get? I wondered because the ball damn near hit him on the back of the head. Who was
I
the? It
mean,
was Duvernay who made it down there first?
I'd have to,
Yeah,
honestly, I didn't
I
get
mean,
it.
but
As you and I
whoever
are
got
talking, I didn't
there,
get a chance to review it,
whoever
but
got there real quick is all I'm
sure.
saying. Like it made me think, was there a flag there? Did he in real time? I'm like, how did he not fair catch that? He didn't have any space to catch it, was my first thought. But if you don't fair catch, they don't give you space. They blow you up, you know?
Yeah, I mean that's just how it is. And a little surprise. I mean, it kind of speaks to Cleveland having a need there because I mean he was signed to their practice squad not that long ago and then promoted to their 53 man. So, every team has needs at different positions over the course of a season. But the point is going back to the offense. I mean, it's not as though they had multiple great long drives. I mean, they basically had they had three legit drives in that game. They the their first offensive drive with the Keaton Mitchell play. I mean, it was 5 yards or 5 plays, 79 yards, 8 plays, 56 yards when Tucker had the 37-yard field goal late in the first quarter. I mean, they had a 17-point first quarter, best first quarter they've had in a few years, points wise. And then they had the drive with Beckham, to start the third quarter, which again was a quick strike, 6 plays, 78 yards, 231. But it was really, Cleveland kind of did what the Ravens like to do to the teams, right? And that's have these long, pronounced, soul-crushing kind of drives that, tire out your defense, keeps your offense off the field. I mean, the Ravens, they were bad on third down, as I said. They really couldn't get into their running game the way they wanted to. And even when they did run the ball in the second half, it wasn't very good. And I'll hear it. Look, I'll hear it just like anyone else. Keaton Mitchell needs to touch the ball more. I mean, this kid is electric. But I'll remind he's also an undrafted rookie who missed a good bit of time, missed the beginning of the season. Is he as well versed in the playbook, in pass protection, blitz pickup, all the different things that even a running back has to be able to do to unseat Gus Edwards. And he's not going to do that because Gus Edwards is a different style of back, obviously. But that's certainly something that is, it was asked about. And John Harbaugh wasn't going to throw Todd Monken under the bus and wasn't going to throw Keaton Mitchell under the bus if the reason is he doesn't know the entire playbook yet to the degree that he needs to. And I'm not, to be clear, I'm not saying that is the case. I'm just explaining, potential reasons why he might not be out there more. But the point is, they weren't able to sustain drives nearly enough. And we get into this this idea of complementary football, where your offense helps the defense and vice versa. And there just wasn't a whole lot of that going on Sunday, especially in the second half. I mean, the defense couldn't get off the field. Cleveland was 8 of 16 on third down. The Ravens were 2 of 8 on third down. You know, that's an area where the Ravens have really thrived when you talk about what their third down offenses look like and what their third down defenses look like. You know, they both have been, you know, their defense was third down, I think, 8th in the NFL, which is on the low side compared to most of their rankings. And
yeah, but you say they fail on third down. That's 6 punts or field goals. They haven't, like, the 4th and 1 and 4th and 2, and we're on the 44-yard line and we're going to go. There hasn't been a lot of that. You know, even in these blowout wins, it's been more like the fourth down thing that they had going for them, that extra play that they managed over the body of work to want to. They haven't gotten into desirable fourth down situations. They haven't been close in some cases as an offense.
Yeah. I mean, that's something, boy, we talked about in 19 when things were really humming for them. I mean, anywhere on the field, it was 4th and 1. I mean, even at their own 25-yard line, they were going, right? I mean, that's just how it was. And we haven't seen that. And John Harbaugh hasn't been as aggressive in some of those spots. And I'm not
maybe
even,
that's why
DeCosta's
on the sideline whispering in his ear. You
that's
know?
Not even a knock. Right. It's an observation more than anything else. But, I mean, it's just what we saw Sunday. Again, you saw the chunk plays. You know, I mean, Mark Andrews, who was otherwise really, really quiet, had a 36-yard reception. Zay Flowers had the 18-yard reception. Bateman had an 18-yard catch. Beckham, who did not play a whole lot, mind you, but had the 40-yard touchdown on the third down to open up the third quarter. Keaton Mitchell, of course, had a long catch in addition to his touchdown run. So, you know, they got some chunk plays, but they just couldn't put together or sustain these drives. And, you know, and then you couple that with the defense not being able to get off the field. I mean, you know, Cleveland controlled time of possession. I mean, that was a big part of this. I mean, there weren't many drives in this game overall, and including for Cleveland, because, you know, they just, you know, they put together 7-minute drives, 10-minute drives. I mean, so you look at the final, you know, we talked about this a little bit and some of the fallout leading into Thursday night, potentially. I mean, defense was on the field a whole lot and the offense couldn't stay on the field a whole lot, you know, at times in Sunday's game. So, and again, I didn't expect this offense to come out and march down the field over and over and over against a Cleveland defense that, I mean, most people have perceived the Ravens and the Browns as like Coke or Pepsi in terms of best defense in the league. And, you know, San Francisco might have something to say about that before it's all said and done, but that's been the perception, right? I mean, it's been 1 and 2. I mean, no matter how you want to look at it, you know, DVOA, you know, all kinds of different analytics, yardage, points allowed, all these different things. I mean, they really stacked up one or the other in most categories. So I'm not shocked that the offense didn't, you know, march down the field and score 5 touchdowns against this Browns defense.
Well,
but
especially without Stanley and Moses.
Right.
Let's, I mean, go back to, sure, like, the team that was on the field 3 weeks ago beating the snot out of the Lions is not the team you have when you take two $20 million players out of it, two of your anchor players out of it.
Yeah. I mean, Moses isn't a $20 million player, but
Stanley is, you know, I'm saying. No,
sure.
Stanley and Humphrey, I'm talking
about.
Oh,
right. Well, I was
bad.
Talking about the offense. Sure.
Sorry.
Yeah, no question. And like I said, I do think Stanley's exit probably played a part in how they call, you know, how Todd Monken called the rest of the game. Now, that's not to absolve him, but I think that's part of the potential explanation there as far as, you know, why it looked the way it did. And, you know, people can look at it and say they should have run the ball more. And I'll hear that. I mean, there are certainly a couple spots here and there they could have run more, but even when they ran it, they didn't have a whole lot of success. Go look at the rushing yardage in the second half. I mean, even when they did, it wasn't very good. So it just wasn't, you know, it wasn't good enough. And, you know, it felt like they did early in the game. They did a decent job in pass protection. But then, you know, we saw Myles Garrett show up at some critical junctures and, you know, Lamar not be as protected. And, you know, Lamar, I didn't think he was awful by any means, but we didn't see a great version of Lamar Jackson on Sunday either. And obviously, you know, turn the ball over in a couple spots. So, you know, I wasn't nearly as surprised to see the offense perform the way that it did against the Browns defense, because I did respect the Browns defense and thought that was a very legitimate, formidable, dangerous defense. And I think the numbers really supported that. So I was more surprised by how the Ravens defense struggled, but at the same time, they just wasn't, the operation across the board wasn't nearly complimentary enough to, frankly, protect what should have been a lead that you could protect in the fourth quarter. You're up two scores, and they just weren't good enough in either of those phases to get the job done. They just weren't.
It was kind of like a soul-sucking loss in the way that, like, I picked the Browns in my segment last week with Christian Horton, who's good. Yeah, well, you were getting 6 points. So okay. I said, you're giving me 6 points.
But you thought the Ravens would win outright, though.
I had the Ravens winning by two. I thought it would be 23-21.
I'm just curious.
That's where I had it. 23-21 is what I picked it. And I just thought 6 points in a division game. The Browns are coming off a big game. The Ravens are bound for some sort of a letdown. Is the way I sort of thought about it, that they're going to play more of a slobber knocker, kind of an AFC North kind of a game. They were going to make mistakes. I predicted turnovers. You know why I predicted turnovers? The Ravens have been generous as teams go. Lamar has been too generous as things go. That mesh point thing's been a problem, like all of that, right? But more than that, they're a really good defense, and they're going to hack at the ball. Why are they going to hack at the ball? A, it's what they do. They're Jim Schwartz's defense. They're aggressive. Myles Garrett, they're a great defense under themselves in the modern NFL. But more than that, when teams have a propensity to fumble, all you teach all week's hack, hack, hack. We'll get our ass kicked. Let Lamar have 8 yards. Let him have 12 yards. Knock him out of bounds. Snobber knock him. Hey, take 15 yards, no problem. But at some point in the third quarter, we're going to pop the ball in a three-point game. We're going to pop the ball loose, and we're going to fall on it. We're going to run. Deshaun, we're going to win this game because we're going to pop the ball loose. And I'm sure that's how I felt. I went on Cleveland radio last week. I didn't even run the piece here this week, quite frankly, because it was kind of late in the week when I did it with Kenny Rota. I should have run that piece, but I said, pop the ball free, turnovers, turnovers, turnovers. And that ball that Lamar threw off the it hits up in the air. I mean, it literally was a jump ball. And for it to come down the way it came down, in high step with a DB, not a lineman, not a linebacker, it stayed up so long, and then it's a pick six. And that could have gone a million. That was just bad luck. I mean, I said that at the time, not one for luck. I mean, throw a better pass, don't get it deflected,
sure.
All of that.
I hear you.
But there's a luck element to that where, like, that's the kind of ish that's going to go down for you to lose to the Cleveland Browns when you're up 14-0 in the beginning of the game. And you had your own gift. I mean, that Kyle Hamilton play, both of those plays in a vacuum are outliers, and they balance themselves out. But in the end, when the Browns even missed an extra point, opened the door. Like, the Ravens had it was a putrid, hideous, awful loss that they better not top it with letting Joe Burrow come in here Thursday. I mean, this is a really crucial couple of days based on what we saw on Sunday.
Well, no question about it. And I mean, to go back to those two pick sixes, I mean, let's give credit to the beginning of the play. I mean, Hamilton bats it up in the air, but you want it to bat, that bounces right to you, right? It stays up in the air and you take it. Same deal with the Lamar pick six. I mean, it's a great play by the defensive lineman to bat it up in the air, but then you're at the mercy of where it's going to go. In the same way that as a baseball player, the only thing you can control is making hard contact. If the infielder or the outfielder is positioned perfectly,
I'll give you the other example. Shannon Sharp against Denver going down the sideline.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Well, and this is what's so frustrating about how the Ravens have lost so many of these games over the last 2 years. There has been some of that. And I say this all the time. We all like to think that, when we're watching our teams, when we're looking at it as fans, that they control everything. No, there's a lot of random things that happen over the course of a game. The problem is, if you don't do the things that you can control well enough, it leaves it up to some chance, right? Where the ball might bounce the wrong way. So, you mentioned the missed extra point that Cleveland had. I mean, the Ravens had a field goal blocked. Special teams have not been as good for the Baltimore Ravens this year, which is kind of crazy to say that because we know what it is year in and year out, but it's been a very choppy operation for the special teams compared to their normal standard. So, it's just, they haven't been fine enough in areas where you expect them to be fine, and in these losses where they've had leads and they blow it. I mean, it's as simple as that. So, I mean, it's again, going back, since we started talking about the offense, I can't say I'm stunned by how the offense performed on Sunday. I didn't expect them to go out there and put 30 plus points up. And technically the team did, they scored 31 points, but we know that the offense wasn't responsible for all of that. And, I wasn't shocked by that. I picked the Ravens to score 23 points. I picked a 23-10 game. I was feeling the Ravens defense, and I thought the offense would be, not as good as it was against Seattle and Detroit. And that would have been okay. That's okay. But when you have every phase letting down the way that they did on Sunday, that's how you get beat. And that's how you blow a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter. So it has to be better. There's no question about that. And just as we talked about, with the defense, you got to turn the page quickly. It's going to be really interesting to see what this offensive line looks like this week. Assuming we're not going to see Stanley, who knows with Morgan Moses with the shoulder? I mean, he practiced last week, but he didn't play Sunday. What changes as far as Thursday night? Does he give it a go? That moves McCary back to left tackle. But if he can't go, then you're talking about McCary and Daniel Faalele. Kevin Zeitler left the game very late.
Can I say something? Can I
Who
like when
knows?
you say
Sure, go ahead.
Faalele and McCary, what I would say to you is they can't win a Super Bowl that way. That's I mean that's
Well,
what that I would
I'm
say
not
that
saying
out
that
loud, that I
that's
don't think
going to
that's
be
going to
the rest of the
survive.
year, but
I don't think that's going to survive half a season in a playoff. I mean I just I remember watching Stanley go down a couple years ago and saying to my wife, like, they can't win the Super Bowl without him. They need him to win the Super Bowl. And I don't even know the version of Ronnie Stanley we have. We can go through that. I mean, we're not even getting that at this point because of the injury. I fear for that as much as I do. Oh my God, we're playing the Bengals. Oh, we have a tougher schedule. Oh, but I fear the loss of a Pro Bowl corner and a left tackle. And even if they're in and they're not great, that's not good. And the Morgan Moses thing, to your point, it's starting to stack up against a guy who doesn't miss time. So I raved about good health last week. I wrote about good health last week. We talked about good health, but to your point, you are 60 minutes in this league away from catastrophe. And I don't just mean blowing a game against the Browns. I mean, dare I say number eight, Lamar, and keeping him upright. But part of keeping him
Oh,
upright
yeah.
is having left tackles to keep him upright. That's
Sure.
all
Left
part of
tackle.
this.
And both tackles. I mean, he got hurt in Denver. It was, coming from the other side. It
Well, when
wasn't just,
Flacco got
the blind
broken in
side.
half, right? Literally, right?
I mean, that was James Hurst being pushed into his knee. James Hurst was playing left tackle because Eugene Monroe couldn't stay healthy at that point in his career. So yeah, I mean, it's not sounding the alarm, but there's concerns when you're talking about your offensive tackles and their health. And, I mean, with Stanley, I mean, this the same knee that he hurt early in the season. I mean, again, we'll see what the imaging looks like and all that. I'm not going to speculate about how long he's going to be out, but you would think he's at least out Thursday night, right? I mean, just knowing the history of how Ronnie Stanley has bounced back or not bounced back from injuries. I mean, it's just reality of where he's been. I'm not being mean. It's just, it's history. And in the case of Moses, I mean, what version of Morgan Moses are you getting? Is that shoulder going to hold up? Is he dealing with something that's going to require surgery, but he's trying to put it off? I mean, we saw this years ago with Marshall Yanda, who had to literally switch sides because his shoulder was so messed up. But that was the only thing that saved him from going on IR back in, what was it, 2016, I think it was. So, it's not ideal. I mean, especially when you're talking about guys that are so important to your success. And the saving grace for this week, Nestor, is Cincinnati was already without Sam Hubbard this past Sunday, and Trey Hendrickson got hurt late in that game, and the early indication of, he might miss some time, with a knee issue. So, the good thing for the Ravens would be Cincinnati's pass rush not being at full strength, the way it's shaping up, at least early on in the week. As long as it sounds funny to say early in the week, talking about a Thursday game, because like you said, it's upon you just like that. So neither of these teams are going to be at 100%. There's no question about that. It's a Thursday night game. You tape it up. Right? You tape it up, you rub dirt on it, and you go out there and play the game. I mean, that's how this works. So, they've got to find a way. They find a way. They've got some rest coming up, which will help Stanley, will help a Morgan Moses. You hope it'll help a Marlon Humphrey that it's not, a catastrophic kind of injury, despite some of the early speculation. So, that's just, they got to find a way. They got to find a way on both sides of the ball. Cincinnati's saying the same exact thing after a loss to the Texans. And we're going to see how it plays out. But boy, this game is going to be so pivotal to what happens the rest of the way in the AFC North. I mean, it's, you hate it being a Thursday game for that reason, just for both teams, quite frankly, knowing that it's not the full representative effort that you typically are going to see. But they got to make the best of it. They got to find a way. If they do it, they'll be fine moving forward in the sense of keeping themselves in really good position in this division and in this conference.
I like to tell this story from back in the day when I worked at the News American. We would have a guy that would call the newsroom back at the News American 1984, 85. And this is back in the days when like home team sports just started, cable TVs, you're an infant, you're like one or two. And a guy would call from Highland Town. And then we'd answer the phone, sports, can you tell me if the game's on color or black and white tonight? And he would ask. So on Thursday, I just hope the game's on color and not black and white or whatever the digital age is. I'm hoping I can watch it on my television as opposed to my video screen. I didn't care enough to try to find the Bears Commanders game weeks ago or whatever, some of these god-awful
Terrible.
festivals. But at least these are two great quarterbacks, big teams coming off awful losses, pivotal game. Steelers are winning, the Browns are winning, they play each other this week. Luke doesn't even have to go out to the castle and contend with the lies this week, although we'll try to figure it all out because when they lace him up at 8 o'clock, 8:20 on the Thursday night, we'll know who's healthy and who's not healthy. But certainly this is a really weird week, a long off time. We got bye weeks coming up, a trip out to LA, we have turkey to eat, we have crab cakes to eat for crying out loud. We're gonna be at Costas on Tuesday. This week we're gonna be at Pappas in Parkville next Tuesday. Then we make it to Coco's on the 29th. We're going to be at Gertrude's at the BMA on the 30th. We're going to be at Hollywood Casino at the Sportsbook up there with Christian Horton on the 1st. That is a Maryland, Indiana hoops game, Maryland basketball. That's its own thing. And Luke will have some updates on Oriole Awards. I love all of these awards in the offseason. I would have preferred the parade, but we'll get to that as well. But it's big football week around here. Bengals in town. We got the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have these Raven scratch-offs to give away. We gave some away at Fately's on Friday. Had a great conversation with Bill Cole. Mac Campbell, who is runs the Baltimore Convention Center, who's a lifer friend of Alan McCallum, so you know he's good people, joined us, and we had some fun. We talked about deviled eggs. You won't want to know the outcome of that. I had some shrimp salad. We talked about all the salads, potato salad, macaroni salad, all those things I don't eat. Only salad I eat is Greek salad. That's why I'm going to Costas this week, going to Pappas next week, Coco's after that. That's the kind of salad I want, Greek salad. Gave me a salad with cabbage up in Philadelphia, another reason not to go to Philadelphia. Tommy Conwell and the Young Rumblers coming down here on the second play in the Wrecker as well. So I want to give a shout out to that. Get your tickets. If you want to rock, get over to the Wrecker on the second. Even you young guys, Luke, bring your sister and your brother down here. We'll show them what rock and roll's all about. Also, our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. 0% financing through the holidays there. And I don't want to forget Jiffy Lube MultiCare because they fixed my oil the other day. I'm big appreciation of that and all of their work on our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. That's taking us everywhere, even the State Fair on the 5th of December. We're even going to be a foreign daughter. We're going to import a crab cake over to Foreign Daughter over in Timonium Road. I have an idea. There was this great crab cake I ate 2 summers ago. Man, it's been like 2.5 years ago. Wow, that's crazy that I had this crab cake and it was so good that I've been wanting to have it again. And ever since Chad Steele kicked me out, it's on Liberty Road. I used to pass it and I thought, like, well, I'll stop and get it, but I haven't been out to the castle since, well, it's been May of last year. So I got to get back out to the west, northwest quadrant. I've got a crab cake in mind that I'm going to pair up with our friends at Foreign Daughter. So there, little breadcrumb there for you. I'm Nestor, a little crab cake crumb. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, making it a short week around here and hoping for the best against Joe Burrow. We're going to stay Baltimore positive here amidst all the purple madness.